Madam Secretary, could you call the roll?
Director Najarian?
Here.
Director Molina?
Here.
Chair Wilson?
Here.
A quorum is present.
Proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. This month's report will be presented by Mike Smith Solo, Assistant Treasurer.
What's the last name?
Smith.
Smith. Okay, thank you. Nice. Mr. Smith, go ahead.
And while there's been some improvement in the economy, the consensus forecast continues to be for slow growth, and that level of growth could slow further if significant problems develop with Europe's banks as a result of defaults on sovereign debt. Positive news is that the economy grew at a 2.5% rate in the third quarter, but that growth isn't currently expected to accelerate, and could sustained recovery may be unlikely until unemployment and consumer confidence improve. U.S. Treasury rates remain low through the curve out to 30 years. The decline in municipal bond rates, however, hasn't kept pace with Treasuries, but municipal rates through 10 years are still attractive. The impacts of the slow economy and the low interest rates are that the recovery rate of our sales tax revenues may not be sustainable and could underperform current expectations in the absence of a more robust recovery. Additionally, low municipal interest rates through 10 years may provide an opportunity to refund the Prop C 2003 bonds for savings. For September, actual fair revenue was slightly lower than both the current budget and the prior year actual. Monthly boarding did the prior year actual. And since last month, we closed the Prop A 2001 refunding, locking in $2.7 million of savings each year through fiscal year 18. We're about to release an RFP soliciting cost reduction ideas that under current market conditions may yield significant savings for the 2003 bonds. We expect to provide our recommendations in February. Our recommendations
of before you go on, the RFP solicitation, what prompted that? Is that just something that we do periodically, or is that something that was precipitated by some action or whatever?
Precipitated by, we've been receiving unsolicited proposals from various underwriters with different types of ideas, so we are throwing out a sort of generic RFP to come back with their ideas, and we'll assess which are the best. It is focused, going to be focused on the 2003 bonds.
Thank you.
Our recommendations of banks to provide replacement liquidity facilities for the $166 million of Prop C bonds is before this committee today is item 19, and requests authorization to conclude negotiations and execute the agreements. Finally, regarding our AIG affected defees leases, we have finalized two collateral agreements that, when executed, will resolve the AIG-related defaults. Execution has temporarily been delayed pending receipt of an FTA concurrence letter. By early December, we hope to have executed these lease collateral agreements. For the facility replacement, we plan to execute agreements in February. And finally, we'll evaluate the proposed cost reduction strategies for the Prop C 2003 bonds and provide our recommendations in February. And that concludes the presentation.
Have any questions or comments? Okay, may I ask before you leave the microphone, in your view, based on all the readings that you have, the cost of funds for borrowing compared to a quarter ago and compared to a month ago, is it a lower cost for us now versus those two reporting periods?
I think rates have been relatively stable the last few weeks. I haven't made an assessment specifically of that prior period.
Do we actually look at those things? Do we look at them, or is it just on a transactional basis that we look?
Well, we tend to watch them more closely when we're, and very specifically, when we're in a transaction or about to be in a transaction.
So it's by transaction?
Well, we monitor the rates more closely when we're in and around a transaction. So.
The reason I asked that question, I'm just wondering if we know we have a need for refunding of, or issuing another bond, are we really taking a look in advance before our the expiration or the term for that, that issue that we have to see if we can place a bond purchase or bond issuance at a more time-sensitive segment in time, I would say.
Absolutely. We have a process of regularly reviewing all of our bond issues. The financial advisor has them all modeled, and they input the interest rates and can fairly quickly screen to see which issues are generating a profit or would generate a profit currently if we refinance them. So we do that on a regular basis. We additionally get help from the bond underwriters who also do that type of modeling and have some even more creative ideas. So and that's what's prompted this this RFP request.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Thank you. Board members, anyone else? John, I know you just arrived. Do you have any comments or questions?
No comments, no questions.
Okay, thank you. Are you? Ms. Marshall, before you get started, I saw Mr. Matsumoto standing there. Are you going to give me what I asked for after this is all over, or was that part of what I was asking for?
I can address your questions about changes in rates as they affect our American Fast Forward now.
Can you come to the microphone so we can hear you, because you're kind of a soft-spoken person.
Thank you. I think it'd be appropriate to address your questions about the change of status of the America Fast Forward in light of the declining interest rate market since those model numbers were run as of December 31, 2010, and today's rates are somewhat lower. Let me tell you that the America Fast Forward on a national basis is a $45 billion proposal spread over 6 years. The modeling showed that the cost for federal purposes, federal scorekeeping, the cost of the $45 billion program nationwide would be about $10.1 billion over the 10-year period that they measure it.
The cost that we would incur that we're asking the feds to pay for, is that what you're referring to? Are you talking about globally the cost for the program all over the nation?
It's all over the nation.
You know what that cost would be for what we're asking the feds to do for us?
Relative to us, our plan called for about $5.7 billion of borrowing. So that's about 12%. So 12% of the $10.1 billion would be about $1.2 billion. That's how the federal scorekeeping works solely on our proposal for the bonds.
Okay. Let me just see if I can enlighten our board members. I had a conversation with Mr. Matsumoto, I believe it was yesterday, and my question to him, because you may not be hearing what he's saying or get the full context of it, my question to him was, a year or so ago, we embarked on 3010, America Fast Forward. And at that time, we were the cost of borrowing money via a bond or a series of bonds was X. And so what I asked Mr. Matsumoto to find out and to share with us was, what is that cost today for the share that we're asking the feds to pay for? And so the reason I'm asking that question is because I know in the industry that I'm in, which is very sensitive to real estate mortgages and commercial mortgages, interest rates have gone down over that last 12-month period. And so we have been working with our legislative team back in D.C. trying to get them to help us by allowing us to measure our money and ask them to pay for the interest so that we can get all these projects that we want to build built sooner versus building them later. And so that being said, my question to Mr. Matsumoto was, what was the cost that we would have incurred for issuing those bonds a year ago, whenever it was, that we embarked on this America Fast Forward program? And what are the costs if we were to issue those bonds today? And so that's what I'm trying to get to, so I'll know when we go back to D.C. or we have our legislative team go back to D.C. And the members of the House who are have a lot to say about what's going to affect the budget, they would know what the budgetary impact it would be on the federal government or the portion of the money that we're asking the feds to pay for with respect to the debt service. So that's what I'm asking, and I'm trying to figure out, is there going to be a savings? If so, is it significant or is it not? So that then when we can make an argument to the feds about them doing this, we can show them that the budgetary impact that they were going to have a year ago will be less than what it is today, given that the rates of interest are less today. And so that's what I'm trying to get from Mr. Matsumoto.
Thank you. Continuing on, the rate on which the estimates were based in December 2010, the end of the month, was 5.67. That rate as of yesterday was 4.91, about a 14% reduction. So continuing our share of the federal cost, you know, the way that the feds look at it, would have been at the old rate about $1.2 billion. At the new rate would be about $1 billion, a difference of $200 million less.
So the impact on the federal budget would be about $200 million less at today's rates than it would have been a year ago. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, for our piece.
But that's what I'm concerned with, is our piece.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, continuing on, the actual benefit to us is avoiding the costs of having to issue interest-bearing bonds on our $5.7 billion. So the benefit to the program would have been $3.1 billion based on the December 31 rates. But since the rates have gone down, the benefit to the program are valued at 2.7.
So that difference, what type of enhancement or what type of project could be either augmented that's in the long-range plan or the Measure R projects that are on the back end of the 30 years? What conceivably could we do with that extra $200 million, assuming that the feds agree to allow us to borrow that money on our own dime?
The $200 million is the federal savings.
Right.
They save the money. We don't.
Right.
If we went ahead and if the feds went ahead and authorized America Fast Forward at $47 billion, if they did that at today's rate, it would budgetarily cost them $1.4 billion less. Now, our share of that would have been $200 million less. But we don't get the money. Remember, our 3010 plan assumes that we were going to get this money interest-free. So the program is, you know, marginally more palatable to the feds today, to the tune of about $1.4 billion over its the OMB, federal OMB scorekeeping.
If you could send me those numbers, and then as I meet with my colleagues and also the legislative advocacy team we have, we can at least refine our message. You know, we've had conversations with Chairman Mica and some of his staff, and they're very sensitive to anything that impacts the budget. And we're very sensitive to anything that we can do to speed up the process with the projects that we want to build. So if you could help me with that and send it as a board box so everybody will have access to that information too.
Yes, please be aware that the numbers I've just quoted you are very preliminary. I haven't had a chance. I pieced it together from a number of different sources, and so we'll do a staff review, so that there might be some minor changes.
Sure.
That we'll get out of the board box as soon as that review is completed, next day or two.
Yes, Mr. Fasano. Before you go, there's a question from a board member.
Just on a parallel track, I presume interest income is down a little bit as well for us in terms of our balances. Are there other implications in this report that can be provided at a fairly high level that are positive?
We have been very conservative in our budgetary projections for this current year, projecting investment earnings to be very, very low, somewhere in the range of 1%. Year to date, it is about that throughout across our portfolios.
No comments.
Thank you, Mr. Matsumoto. Next item.
Good afternoon, members of the board. Item 18 is a request for the CEO, authorizing the CEO to enter into a lease agreement with Downtown Properties for the rental of approximately 12,900 square feet of office space in an office building located at 818 West 7th Street in downtown Los Angeles, an estimated rental cost of $1,742,580 over the term of the lease. The Office of the Inspector General has occupied space in the 818 building since 1998. The current lease will expire on February 28, 2012. Negotiations were held with the landlord to enter into a new lease effective March 1, 2012, at an initial annual rental rate of $25.42 per square foot with the new base year of 2012. Annual base rent will increase by 3% per year thereafter. The new rent represents a $62,000 saving over the five-year term of the lease. In addition, the landlord also made a number of improvements to the space, provided an additional allowance of other improvements, and provided the equivalent of one free parking space as part of the reduced rent calculations. The proposed rent is favorable to MTA when compared to comparable office space in downtown Los Angeles. We will complete negotiations of a lease amendment with the approval of County Council if this item is approved. Are there any questions?
For members?
So, question.
Yes.
I was surprised when I saw the original amount of square footage that the Inspector General had. That's quite the original. I know it's cut down, but
right.
Almost 25,000 square feet.
Yes.
How many employees do we have in that office?
There are 19 presently. It was larger at the original time. There are 19 members there now.
Okay. I didn't realize that department was that large. I guess.
It's been a cleaner organization since you went around.
And is there no room in this wonderful Gateway Center to... restacking the deck?
We've spoke with the property manager here, Don Odd, and he indicates there is not sufficient space. Also, there are some other requirements that the IG require in terms of access, limited access to their space, specialized improvements that would be required, and it would not be feasible to make those arrangements in this building for that staff.
I mean, do they have holding cells or something?
I'm going to ask Mr. Jack to come and explain that.
I mean, isn't this just an office type environment?
Part of what they do, of course, are investigations which result in reports, and all that material is very sensitive, and therefore, even with the same cleaning crews and things, there's a sensitivity issue. Secondly, they are very sensitive to people coming in and out of their office. Whistleblowers are encouraged, those kinds of things. And if they are in the same building, they feel that that is an impediment. Most of the material they have is highly sensitive because that's what they do. They do investigations, and the material that they generate and the interviews they take have to be locked up very securely in the terms of what they do. I think we have a representative of the IG here as well.
Okay, I buy the whistleblower argument, but as far as sensitive documents, I mean, everything that our staff does as we develop these multi-billion dollar projects.
Yes, I think the sensitivity, the director, is that they don't work for Metro. They work for you as the board, and therefore the consequence or the care they take to not have the information leaked to other Metro employees is different in scope. I think really that's one of the issues.
Yeah, I'm gonna take staff's unless Mr. Leahy wants to jump in.
Mr. Chair?
Oh, I'm sorry, you're in China. You didn't tell us. Get out here.
Ni hao. Historically, the IG was in the headquarters building. That changed about 14, 15 years ago because the then IG.
Excuse me, we have another person who's the CEO now. Your visa was revoked.
Can I get 60 seconds? About 14, 15 years ago, the then IG thought, for the reasons just cited, it should be separate. The fact is, life doesn't end if it comes into this building. The IG isn't here to comment. I don't think she would be particularly upset. I don't know. I'm not speaking for her. It used to be in this building, hasn't been in this building for 12 or 13 or 15 years. If you'd like to have us go back and look at that and talk to the IG, we could certainly do that.
I'm from the IG's office, Jack Shigatomi.
Mr. Shigatomi, before
the
you
IG
speak,
is expressed.
Director Fasano had a comment. Can you hold your?
Okay.
That's also true. There is not that kind of discrete space left. It's still, even though it's much smaller, it's still a half a floor, essentially. And we'd have to clear a whole half floor, which is really not available.
Okay. I don't have any other questions. I mean, I think I get the picture, and I will defer to your wisdom, staff's wisdom on the recommendation.
Okay, Mr. Fasano, Ms. Molina.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Ms. Marshall, may I ask, you've been in this business for a long time. The rates that we are being offered compared to the rates that are being offered in the market overall today, how would you rate them as far as being really a great deal, being a five, and being a lousy deal, a one? What would you rate it?
I rate it as a great deal. There's an attachment which shows some of the current market rates of similar buildings in downtown Los Angeles, which range mostly from $30 up. We're getting a reduction from our current rent, and we're down at $25.42 a square foot. So I think we're getting a good deal, and we're getting a savings over our existing lease.
And that's the rates based on the folks that are offering lease space now and not on those that have already secured their lease, right?
These are offered spaces, according to our
basically that are being offered now.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Okay, there is a – thank you, Ms. Marshall. There is a motion on the floor, and it's been seconded. Without objection, so ordered. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Molier. And thank you, Mr. Leahy.
Sir.
Good afternoon again, members. Item 19 is a series of actions required for us to replace expiring credit facilities. As a result of a competitive process, we make a recommendation as detailed in Attachment B, the names of the providers that we will seek to negotiate with and their respective bid prices. These kinds of products are only available from major banks. All of the top three proposers in each of the categories listed on Attachment B are in the $100 billion or more in total assets. Just think of this, the lower section direct purchase option requires the bank to actually buy from us $160 million worth of bonds and hold them for 3 years. Be happy to answer any questions.
Board members? Okay, Mr. Matsumoto sent me some information regarding the assets base for these banks that we're proposing to use for this commercial paper. It's commercial paper, right?
No, there are two categories of things: letters of credit and a direct purchase option. Letter of credit is a very common, is very similar to commercially available letters of credit.
I know we have an auditor who works with us. I'm just wondering what type of due diligence we do when we are considering someone who's going to hold our money and let us manage part of what we're doing. Can you kind of explain to me and to the others here?
Okay, our due diligence process is that we have required each of the proposers to maintain the highest credit ratings of short-term for their short-term from each of the three credit rating agencies. Those are Moody's, Investors Service, Standard & Poor's, and Fitch Ratings. We verify those ratings by looking at published information that is readily available to us. We do look at asset sizes, and we do look at their ability to complete their mandates when they've actually been awarded the deal.
Board members, anybody have any action they want to take on this?
I'll move the item.
Been moved. And seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none. Mr. Smith, before we call for the vote, one of the things you had mentioned earlier was that there was this proposed RFP to look at the costs of us using firms to do this kind of work for us. And in your view, the fees that we're paying, and I think as I read through the report, they amounted to about 2% of what the total amount was. Is that about normal for this type of
Yes, the rates that we're paying are to the from the middle to lower portion of rates that are out available in the market today for comparable AA issuers.
And have you noticed any trends where the banks and other institutions that we're proposing to use have changed and reduced their fees, or they may remain stagnant throughout the recession?
No, they've varied tremendously. Before the recession, we were paying for similar facilities, perhaps 15 basis points. With the crisis, that jumped to maybe 125. The next go-around for the facility we're currently replacing, we're paying 95. This go-around, we're paying 50 to 60. So it's on the way down.
I think that there was a motion and a second, and if there's no objection, so ordered. Thank you both.
Good afternoon. I'm Ruth Holden, Metro's auditor, and I'm presenting first quarter report for Management Audit Services. We had a very productive first quarter. We completed 29 projects to start the year off, and we closed 25 of the open audit recommendations. They've been resolved and closed. We added a few from the 29 audits, though, so we're still about even. I issued 7 internal audit reports this first quarter, and we listed them in the board report in order of magnitude of the risks that their findings represent to the agency. The first one I issued I want to talk about is our performance audit on the I-405 Sepulveda Pass Improvement Project. We looked at that project because it contains ARA funding and it's a very large project, so we wanted to take a look at the controls over it. And we found for the most part that the project complies with contractual requirements and the applicable federal and state laws. However, most of the issues noted in the report relate to the improvement of oversight. We found that improvements were needed in the oversight of quality management, oversight of the Buy America process, compliance to change order requirements, oversight of ARA job reporting to Caltrans, and oversight of safety related to appropriate driver's license for trucks used on the site. We brought these issues up during the audit and at the issuance of the audit report, and management has corrected some of them and is committed to correcting the rest of these issues. Another audit that we did relates to the compliance to groundwater environmental laws. And we found that we're compliant with most of the applicable environmental laws, but two things we found in this area is that required tests were not always performed within the required state time frame. They were using an Excel file to track when tests were due, and it wasn't very accurate or kept up to date. They've since shifted that to the M3 system, which gives a warning as to when those tests are done. The other area we found in here was there were some significant untimely response to notice of violations issued by state agencies, and management has developed standard operating procedures to address these issues noted in the report. The other issue I want to talk about, or the other audit I wanted to talk about, is Active Directory security management. And in layman terms, Active Directories is related to controlling access around software. And we found some internal control deficiencies in three areas, which could potentially cause some unauthorized access to data and resources. Management's already taken steps to resolve the issues in this audit. And the last audit I'm going to talk about this afternoon, it's been a long day, is compliance to human resources policy. Pretty much they're doing a really good job, but we found that the agency is not complying with the Federal Immigration Reform and Control Act, and that's regarding records retention of I-9 forms. They were shredding them early, basically, and it's not in compliance with the law. They've corrected that. We also noted some file documentation and monitoring of recruiting files could be improved. Management's retrained some staff and revised policies and procedures so that these issues were addressed. The last three audits in the report that we issued this quarter had really no significant issues noted during the audit. So I'm going to conclude my report and ask if you have any questions.
Donna.
Just quickly, I recall reading the audit in terms of the hearing protections, and there are a few things. Could you just summarize quickly? It seemed like there were areas where we weren't in compliance on that.
Yeah, we had on the hearing conservation, we had a couple things that we dealt with in that audit. One was that the records were not being secured, and there's medical privacy laws. I brought that up to them the minute we found it, and it was immediately corrected. The other thing we found under the hearing conservation had to do with the fact that on the rail side specifically, they weren't going to safety first, the hearing conservation guys, to check on noise levels before machinery was being bought, so that it was within the noise tolerance levels. And what they've done is that they've updated policies and procurement requirements to buy equipment that it has to go through them first to make sure that the noise that the machine makes is within the hearing conservation tolerance levels.
How would you like to have us do that? You want to hear?
Okay, I will do that for you.
Okay, board members, anyone else with comments on the audit? I'd just like to make a statement regarding the portion of the audit you shared with me with dealing with the 405 freeway and the risk level that we had for being in out of compliance with the federal statute with respect to Buy America. And I'd like you to be prepared to talk about that at the board meeting.
Okay.
Thank you.
No
and
problem.
If you could call in Mr. Murthy and make sure he's on board and that you have all discussed this. And the second piece of that is that what part of that project was actually done by the Caltrain folks and what part was done by us?
Okay. Is the Caltrans piece that you're concerned about related to the latest newspaper issues? Okay, just what they're responsible for QA versus us? Okay. Will do.
Okay. Do we need a motion on that, Madam Secretary? Is that a receiving file?
Yes, it is.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Holden. Oh, I see we have the CEO report.
Mr. Chairman, I'll take this opportunity to congratulate, I guess is the right term, Director Najarian, on taking on yet another job as the chairman of the San Fernando Valley Council of Governments, which last week began its involvement in transportation with the first San Fernando Valley Mobility Summit, which was a highly successful event attracting over 300 people, including congressional and state legislative members.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor.
That's your report?
That's my report.
All right.
All right. I think, is there any other business or is any members of the public that would like to speak?
Any questions?
Oh, okay. No other items?
Move to adjourn.
Move to adjourn. Thank you.